Blog Talk Radio.
Bigfoot, with me tonight is my usual co-host Shane. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, doing all right, John.
Good. And as you know, tonight is going to be an open forum on anything cryptid. So if any of you would like to call in and tell us about a story or an encounter you've had, we'd love to hear it. And it looks like we have a caller right now. Let's see who we got here. 330, you're on the air.
Hey, what's happening? Paul from the Janofka Project.
Hey, Paul.
What's
cool,
happening?
Paul. Not much, man. How you doing?
All right. Yeah,
glad you called in.
Tonight I'll give you guys a call.
Yeah, excellent. No, really appreciate you giving us a call. You know, we're just getting back in the swing of things, and really glad to have you call in. So what's going on in your end of the world?
Oh, I mean, not too much as far as any kind of research. We had to take a small break there because we put on that town hall meeting up in Latonia yesterday.
Yeah.
It took a lot of planning on that, you know. Dan Baker, he can't be here tonight. He had to leave, so I figured, you know, what the heck, I'll call in. But, Dan, in the past, I'm going to say the past month, he made some calls and he contacted some people. I mean, he just did a phenomenal job at, you know, getting everything set up. And, you know, when we got to that town hall meeting, it was at the library in Latonia here in Ohio. And, when we got there, there was already, I mean, the library didn't even open until 11. We got there at 20 after 10 just so we'd have time to set things up. And there was already people there, man. It's like, wow. You know,
How big a town are we talking about?
Actually, the town is really small. I mean, it's so small. You blink and you done went through it. That's how small the town is. But it's like the smallest town with the largest library, you know. And, Lisa, the head librarian at the library, you know, she plugged us into some newspapers, and Justin Height of the mayor's office, he actually, did some newspapers, and, you know, they even got in contact with, I think, a Channel 27 News up in Youngstown. We didn't see the news there, but... No, they put it in like 5 area newspapers. I think it was like the Morning Journal. We made front page on the Salem News. He did, I think, a Warren paper. There was like 5 papers or something that they did an article in. And I tell you what, we had so many people there. There was no, I mean, the room that we had is supposed to hold 66 people. We ended up adding more chairs. We had every chair in the library in the place. And then it just got to the point where there wasn't even no standing room. People were still coming in. And I think the librarian said something about 250 people or something. She had to lock the doors and turn people away because there just was no more room.
Wow. That's
unbelievable.
Yeah, you guys must have rivaled like a Finding Bigfoot town hall, maybe even more.
I mean, it was. I just couldn't believe the turnout. You know, from what I understand, you know, some of the people that showed up, you know, some were believers, some were non-believers, some were right on the fence. You know, they didn't know which way to go. You know, and all you can do is just, you know, show them what you got and, you know, just explain things to them and, you know, show them some casts and some videos and, you know, talk about, you know, reported sightings and, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, it's up to them. If they want to believe it, you know, that's fine. But if they don't, you know, that's fine too. You know, some people just, they're at the point to where, you know, I'm not going to believe it until I see it, you know, so...
Mm-hmm.
Which is perfectly fine, you know. Because there was the last sighting in the Franklin Square area was on Route 45. 2 were spotted. They actually stopped traffic at 4:00 in the afternoon.
Wow. So how many witnesses are we talking about?
Well, on that particular thing, now the one witness was actually Dan Baker's wife. There was a, I think it was an SUV in front of her, and they were both kind of going down the hill on 45, and the person in front of her, when this thing ran out in front of the traffic, the person in front of her slammed on the brakes to keep from hitting it, and then a few seconds later, another one came out in front of the car. Well, that must have freaked him out, because she said, whoever's in that car in front of me, as soon as that second one, man, they hit the gas and they was gone. And
wow.
There was somebody else coming in the other direction in a pickup truck. He stopped too, but he actually pulled off the side of the road, and he backed up and he pulled forward and he backed up, actually watched these things, you know, walk away. So I was hoping that one of those people would have been there too, but nobody spoke up. So I thought we might have had the guy, but there was a gentleman. He raised his hands to tell us about, you know, something that he seen. I said, were you the guy in the pickup truck on Route 45? He goes, no. I said, damn. But, yeah, that was July 7th. That happened.
So Dan's wife saw the Bigfoot?
Yes. Dan's wife saw both of them. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Because when the lady in front of her slammed on the brakes, you know, she had to slam on hers too, you know. She's like, what the hell, you know. And then she seen the one go across, and then she said just a second or two later, the other one went across.
Wow.
So,
was
yeah.
this before, you know, or after Dan and y'all's encounter, when Dan did the sketch of the Bigfoot he saw?
It was after, because Dan's sighting was on June 15th.
Okay.
Was she a part of that
sighting as well?
Yes. Dan's
wow.
sighting was June 15th, and her sighting was July 7th. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So she's really hit the jackpot lately, huh?
I'm telling you. Yeah, we was hoping that, you know, maybe the other two people would have, you know, saw that in the paper and actually came to the meeting or whatever. You know, they might have been there, just didn't want to say anything, you know. So, but
hey, can Dan Baker's wife come to Oregon? That sounds like some good luck right there.
She's a Bigfoot magnet.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow, and the chances of that witness actually popping back up is going to be pretty hard. You know, a lot of people are, you know,
right.
they don't want to tell people what they saw.
Right. But
wow.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we showed everybody, you know, everything that we had, and we talked about some sightings. You know, clear back to like 1883 sighting in the New Lisbon area. They called it New Lisbon back then, but. Yeah, clear back, it was in some newspaper, it was an article about two hunters came across this thing, and they thought it was some type of animal or something, and they actually shot it and hit it in the arm. One of the hunters shot it, hit it in the arm, and I guess it grabbed its arm, and it turned, and then it went after him. They dropped their guns and left. So, yeah, that was actually reported to a newspaper back in I think it was December 10th that happened, but it was in a newspaper on the 11th. Yeah, 1883.
Wow.
So, you know, that I kind of tell you, you know, some people think, you know, I mean, how long these things, you know, been around or whatever, but, you know, that.
And why they're so reclusive, and why they hide, and they're so hard to find. You know, they're well
right.
aware of what can happen if they're spotted.
Yeah. So, you know, we had, we probably had about 12 to 15 people, you know, say they actually seen something or they heard the howls or whatever. You know, we played the Ohio howls from 94 because that came from Columbiana County too. And then we also played the howls that was captured in Carroll County. We played them because they're really close. They're similar. And you should have seen the people's eyes, man. They got real big and like, oh, my God, I've heard that before, you know. And we do got a couple people that want us to come out because they have something strange going on in their property and, you know, things like that, you know, which is good. We got to do follow-ups on those and, you know, see what we can come up with there. But, yeah, I remember one lady, she was telling me she's lived where she lives now. She's been there, I think she said 15 years or something. And she says she's always hearing something. And, you know, she don't know what it is. And another lady actually came up to me, you know, because we kind of did a little private one-on-one if they didn't want to say anything in front of everybody else, you know. So some people actually brought pictures of footprints that they've got on their property.
Really?
Yeah. And then there was one gentleman, he was telling us that he found a print so big, you know, he put his whole foot inside the print. And there was still, you know, 6 or 7 more inches, you know, in length more than what his shoe was. So he wants us to come out there too. And then, you know, we also learned a little bit of, you know, things about the area. You know, like on Route 45 where, you know, there's a lot of sightings, you know, lately here too. And some of the people that live close to there and, you know, some of the other sightings that, you know, we were told firsthand, it's all around the Route 45 area. And then we come to find out that used to be like an old mining area, stuff like that. And then there's actually a trail that goes underneath Route 45. And I guess now the city or whatever actually made it a bike trail. And it used to be an old railroad. So,
yeah, it's funny you mentioned the mining and whatnot, because I know Stacy Brown, who we've had on the show, mentioned that he's been doing a lot of research, especially I think in Georgia, checking out old mine shafts and stuff. What are your thoughts like on mine shafts and mining like that? Do you think they hide out there? They use them as a travel route, or?
Yeah, I think it's a really good probable thing. You know, use it for, you know, traveling, you know, maybe even in the winter, you know, hiding out in the wintertime. You know, I'm sure that, you know, there's probably some that actually migrate to a whole new area during, you know, the wintertime. But, you know, I also believe that there is some, you know, they're comfortable where they're at. And, you know, they might use, you know, caves or mines or something, you know, to, you know, hang out in the wintertime, go out, you know, get some food and take it back. And because there, I think there was a gentleman, he told us there was, I think he said 200 and, I keep thinking the number was like 252 mines in that area.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, and then that's only the documented ones, you know, that they were able to find. You know, that's not counting the ones that weren't documented. They're all closed up. They're, you know, kind of shut down there. But, you know, just like in Carroll County, you know, some of the activity we've had down there, I know in that immediate area there was like 25 or 27 mines in that particular area, but there was one opening real close to that property. So, you know, you kind of put two and two together. Hey, you know what? Man, they could go from point A to point B, and you wouldn't know it because they're going to be underground. But, you know, I'm not saying, you know. Then we even had somebody, you know, wanting to know, you know, do we think they're nocturnal? Do we think they hibernate, you know? And it's like, you know, no, I don't think they're strictly nocturnal because there's too many daylight sightings and stuff. And I just think they use the nighttime, you know, for traveling and you know, gathering of food, you know, stuff like that, because they're not going to be seen. And then plus, you know, moonlight, you know, gives them enough light where, you know, they'll be able to see. You know, if you live out in the woods long enough, that moonlight is just like a flashlight.
Yeah.
You know, your eyes get totally adjusted, you know.
Yeah, I don't think they can be strictly nocturnal, you know, because you think about it, during hunting season,
you're not going to want to be sleeping on the forest floor when a guy's walking around with a big gun, you know?
Right, right. You know, and then, you know, you got, oh, I had a young gentleman, you know, he was probably, I'm going to guess he was probably 8-10 years old, and he's going, how come you don't find any bones? I said, well, you know, that's a really, really good question, you know. And,
yeah, that's the million-dollar question.
You know, I just kind of explained to him, I said, you know what, you know, there was a documentary thing that was put on where they took a full-size deer and they actually staked it to the ground so nothing could drag it away, and they put a time-lapse camera on this thing, and in 7 days, this deer was gone.
Yeah.
You know, between rotten and, you know, the maggots and, you know, the predators, and then once the bones are left, here comes the critters, you know, for the calcium, and I said it was gone in 7 days. And you've got the acidity level of the soil, you know,
exactly,
to help decompose stuff, too. So, yeah, I said 7 days, and he's going, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. No, they did one similar with an elephant, a time-lapse thing. I think it was, you know, in Africa. And it was amazing how quickly this thing just disappeared. And you're talking about, you know, a totally different, you know, area compared to – to, like, you know, the United States here.
Right,
and,
and then you're talking the difference between 200 pounds and 2,000 pounds, too, you know, so.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, if that's the case, they might not even need to bury their dead or really hide them. I mean, if they're already in these utmost remote areas, if one of them dies, you know, it's gone fairly quickly.
I mean, you know, I've always thought, too, you know, what if you have a rogue male, let's just say. I mean, there's been, you know, talk about, you know, maybe one of them gets kind of shunned out of the family and he's on his own. All right. There's been talk about that, you know. That being true, you know, nobody knows. But, you know, some of the things, you know, people come up with to make up for lack of evidence. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But, you know, let's just say you have a rogue male. We'll use that as an example. Now, he's out in the woods. He's by himself. He's doing his thing. Now, when his time comes and he dies, you know, are they, you know, is even, not even part of the family members? I mean, is it going to be another family going to come and, like, bury him? You know, or is he just going to just find just, you know, a location, you know, way out in the middle of nowhere in some brush or something and just lay down and then he decomposes, you know. I just wish I could, you know, well, we all do, we could come across, you know, some bones or a body or, you know, something. But it's just weird, you know, so.
Real quick, back to your town hall meeting. What was the? I don't know if you mentioned this or not. I don't think so. What was the main purpose of the town hall meeting? Was it to introduce people to the Janowska project, or just to get some feedback? Or,
well, our main goal for that meeting was hopefully we could get into, you know, a new area and then study that area. You know, we're more like, we're not real big on the public parks. You know, everybody goes to Salt Fork and everybody goes to West Branch and, you know, all over. You know, we're not big on that. You know, we like the private properties. That way, you know, if you're out there and you hear a howl or a knock, you know it's not 30 other people, you know, a half a mile away from me because they're doing the same thing.
Great point, yeah.
You know, yeah, so our main objective for this town hall meeting, you know, was to get, you know, get ourselves known where people know who we are. You know, we told them what we do, you know, what our goal is, you know, to prove this creature to science and all that. You know, we're a no-kill group. You know, we stress that. Even though we take weapons, you know, that's only for, you know, everything else, you know, but Bigfoot. I mean, you know, it's Bobcat,
yes.
It's bear, it's, you know, it's all that. But
I was going to say, I had Derek Randall tell me, you know, because when people, I've been out to the Olympic Project with him, and a lot of people were asking, you know, well, why do you guys, you know, carry weapons? And we're not, I'm not talking about an arsenal of weapons, just personal, you know, weapon. And it's nothing to do with, it's nothing to do with Bigfoot. It's because you're out in the middle of nowhere, and, you know, you should be prepared to defend yourself against wild animals and such.
Right. I mean, you know, we've been out, we've heard coyotes, you know, not real, real close, but in the area. You know, we've never encountered bear yet, but we have an upcoming expedition that we were requested for. It's in Pennsylvania. I did contact two different groups over there that's not from the immediate area, but, you know, they're close, you know, because we don't like to go in another state because we're Ohio-based. We don't want to go into another state, start stepping on toes and, you know, making people mad, you know what I mean, because we came over there and you know, they both said, oh, no, man, that's cool, you know. You know, if you guys come over, man, it'd be great if you could share some info. We'll put it in our database or whatever. And, oh, yeah, you know, we don't have a problem with that, you know. And, you know, we even told the one group, because this gentleman actually, he contacted a group over in PA first, okay. We don't know what happened with that. It just, you know, I don't know if they were just busy and they didn't get a hold of the guy. Or, you know, I don't know what the case is. You know, I'm not going to speculate on that. But,
yeah.
But this gentleman actually, I mean, he, at first he didn't want to talk about what happened. But as time went by, then he would talk to me about it because this is something that we do. He felt more comfortable at it. And, I mean, he just rattled on, you know, because him and his son actually had a sighting while they were hunting here just this past winter. And he said him and his son was out in this field, and the father, he shined a light over at the tree line because there was a small herd of deer grazing in the field about 30 feet from the tree line. Well, when he shined that light over there, he saw this big, darkest brown, hairy thing, he said. He goes, it was standing there, and it was watching the deer, and then it watched us. And he goes, I didn't even tell my son about it. Then he goes, a minute later, he goes, my son seen it. Then he looked at me and says, hey, Dad, did you see that? He said, yeah, but I didn't want to say anything. So they both witnessed it. And he goes, I know one of them deer was going to be at dinner. He goes, I know it because it was standing in, you know, at the edge of the tree line behind, you know, this tall brush. And he said it was, you know, staring them deer down till it seen us. And then he goes, three steps, it, like, basically disappeared. And I guess they did... next day or whatever, they did go up to that same area, and he's not 6 foot tall. He's like maybe 5'10"-ish, right there. And he said the brush was taller than him, and this thing was taller than the brush. So I said, well, you know, you're probably talking 7.5 feet.
Yeah.
You know, that's how tall it is. So he wants us to come over. We're going to do it here in 2 weeks, not this coming weekend, the next weekend. We're going down early Saturday morning. You know, we'll do scouting during the day just to look at the area because, you know, he said he's found some, like, weird stuff, you know, saplings broken off and, you know, just a bunch of stuff. And then he did say, like, a year or so ago, him and his son actually came across this. He goes, it was weird. It was kind of like an igloo thing, made out of sticks and grass and stuff, and he's going, I was thinking of a berry, maybe something. I'm going, I don't know if any bear does that, you know. And so hopefully he can take us back to that area, and we can check, you know, check that out. I don't see that thing being there now, but, you know, it's going to be interesting. And we'll be in bear, country, so.
Yeah. I was going to say, with that sighting, was that a daylight sighting or evening, or?
That was early evening. It was just starting to get dark.
Okay,
it wasn't
yeah.
dark, it was dusk. You know, it was just starting.
Yep, that's almost
that's
quiet
why
an
they,
hour.
That's why they had their flashlights, yeah. Mm-hmm. But, so we're going to check that out, you know. That's going to get us out of Ohio for a little bit. Yeah, we'll be in bear country, but I'll definitely have my .45 loaded, that's for sure, you know. But, you know,
yeah.
as many times as I've been out carrying a handgun, you know, I carry a Smith & Wesson .45.
Mm-hmm.
it's never, ever, ever came out of my holster. You know, I mean, I won't even shoot a bear or a coyote or anything, not unless it's gnawing on my leg or something, you know.
Yeah.
if we come across a bear, you know, and he's 50 feet away from us, you know, as long as he's just doing his thing, we're doing our, you know, we'll back out of the area, leave him go, you know. Just because I see it doesn't mean I'm going to shoot it, you know.
Right.
I'm, you know.
Well, that's the thing.
Yeah.
That's the thing is, you know, especially if you're in some remote areas or areas known for animals, you're around these things and they're really close and you just don't know. I mean, you're never going to see them. You're, you know, bears, cougars, deer, whatnot. Most of the time, they're there. You just don't see them. And
right.
they avoid you. They just
right.
avoid you.
Yeah, as long as you don't, you know, confront it, you know, or anything like that, you know, majority of the time it's going to leave you alone. You know, the thing with like bobcat, mountain lion, you know, stuff like that, you know, they're not going to come at you from the front. They're going to be
right.
hanging up in a tree or sitting on a rock or something, and you're not even going to know it's even coming. You're not even going to know he's even there until he's gnawing on your neck, you know, because he's going to jump down at you. But just got to, you know, stay alert, that's all. But yeah, as far as, you know, carrying a gun, it's only for my protection. You know, I'm not, you know, even if, let's just give an example. Even if we're walking through the woods and this Bigfoot comes out, you know, 20 feet from us and stands there and kind of gives us a little, you know, growl or something, I'm not going to pull my gun out and shoot it. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So even, you know, a scenario like that, you know. Yeah, you want evidence, but, you know, I'm not going to shoot one just to get it, you
mm-hmm.
know. That's silliness if you ask me, but.
Yeah, I agree.
you know, the ideal thing is, man, if you could just find a body somewhere or something, you know, or even you could get the best video ever that, you know, makes the patty film look like Blob Squatch or what, you know, you could have the best. There's still going to be people out there going, oh, you know what, that was your buddy in a suit, you know, so the only
yep.
way to actually prove it is to have a real body. Then, you know, you can't say, oh, that was fake or, you know, whatever, but.
Yeah.
I think video would be sufficient to some degree if we had corroborating evidence with it, though.
Right. You know, if you had a video and then, you know, you had video or pictures of a trackway to go with it and then those, you know, some casting material down and then you have that, you know, okay. Then,
it's a step
you know,
in the right
you know,
direction.
You know it was legit and if other people didn't think so, well, you know, I don't want to tell you too bad, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's just like people in their sightings, you know, they go, you know what? I've seen bear before, and that wasn't no bear, and that wasn't a deer, and you know, I the one lady, her and her little daughter had an encounter they seen one. She said it was about 4 years ago, you know, over there in Columbiana County. And she's going, you know, I know it wasn't a bear, and I keep telling people. I said, you know what? I said, you knew or you know what you had seen. And nobody's going to tell you any different because you know what you've seen, you know. I said, just like me in 2011, I know what I saw. Nobody's going to tell me it was anything different, you know. It's just when you have a Class A sighting, you know, you're going to get beat to death, but, you know, you're crazy. Oh, what kind of drugs you on? What are you smoking?
You saw a bear.
You know, all
somebody
that.
Somebody was messing with you.
Yeah, I've heard it all. And, you know, so, you know, people have a Class A sighting. They know what they've seen. They can't believe what they've seen, but they know what they've seen. And, you know, and they know it wasn't a bear, you know. Just about everybody knows what a bear looks like because, you know, everybody's been to the zoo, you know, so. But, you know, I don't want to try to change subject here, but, yeah, the town hall meeting, our main goal is to get into a new location and, you know, do some studies over there and, you know, hopefully we can come up with some more evidence and, you know, things of that nature. You know, kind of get our group name out where people, you know, know us and, you know, know. We're not there to, you know, tear anything up, you know, and, you know, we go in somebody else's property, you know, we don't disturb anything and, you know, we don't make a mess, we don't leave track, you know, we don't do none of that, so.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a great way to expose you guys, you know, to stories and encounters that you're not going to find online, you're not going to get, any other way of hearing about these other than from word of mouth or exchanging numbers and that, I mean.
The thing. I mean, you know, we had everything from Class A to Class C, you know, sighting. There was a lot of Class Bs, you know, where people's heard something or, you know, whatever, but there was some Class A sightings and, you know, people were dead serious on what they seen. And, you know, once we kind of asked, you know, hey, has anybody seen or heard or, you know, it was a little bit hard to get that first hand up. But once you did, and then, you know, here come a couple more, and here come a couple more, you know, so, yeah. But it turned out pretty good, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it sure sounds like it.
I tell you what, I could not believe the turnout. I was freaking out. You know, I wasn't nervous. You know, the night before, poor Dan, he's starting to get nervous because he's going to do the introduction. You know, he's going to do the introduction, and he's going, oh, my God, I hope I don't mess this up. And, you know, he's got it, you know, all wrote down. He's trying to memorize it, you know. And he was, oh, man, I'm so freaking nervous, you know. I said, ah, calm down. I said, what's there to be nervous about? I said, I'm not nervous. He goes, really? Yeah, I'm not nervous. And even Saturday morning, I get up. I'm not nervous. I get to the library. You know, we get out. We're taking stuff in, you know. I ain't nervous, but the minute them doors cracked open and then people just started funneling in, I went, uh-oh.
Yeah. Are we going to get a, what kind of crowd are we going to get? A bunch of, like, people with pitchforks, or are they going to be open?
Well, you know, believe it or not, we had, you know, how can I say this without trying to sound like a butthead, but different types of people. You know what I mean? We had, I don't even know how to say it. I don't want to make nobody mad because, you know, on how I say this, but just different types of people. You know, anywhere from people you would never even expect to even be interested, you know, down to, you know, the, you know, like the, you know, I don't know, people call them rednecks or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was just that whole entire range of people. It wasn't just a certain type of people that showed up. You know, it was, you know, different. And, I mean, you know, I thought it was great, you know, because, you know, some of the people you wouldn't expect to even be remotely interested was there, you know. And, you know, you had, you know, some people look like, you know, maybe they were city-type people, you know, instead of country-type people, you know. We thought that was great because it was like a mix of different types of people there. And we had people come over from Pennsylvania. We had people come from West Virginia to show up there. We had Doug Waller and some members from the SOSBI down by Cambridge.
Wow.
They came all the way up. Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we had quite a crowd. I'm telling you, it was great because you had, you know, just all these people and, you know, they come from all these different areas and all that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, Paul, so with the crowd there that attended your town hall meeting, did you guys get any? Did you guys get attacked at all, or get any harsh criticism, or was everybody pretty open to what you had to say and what the attendees had to say?
It was actually really great because there was no criticizing, no matter who believed what.
Nice.
You know, everybody pretty much had an open mind, you know, which is great because I know there were some people there that really didn't believe it, but they wanted to come to see what we presented as far as evidence, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were some people, they were on the fence, you know. They didn't know whether to believe it or not believe it. Then we had some people there that believe Bigfoot exists, but they didn't think it existed around their area.
Oh, okay.
You know, they were thinking, okay, over in California or whatever. They had no idea of any type of sighting being reported or people, you know, saying that they've seen things, you know, that never reported it, you know, in their own area. There was people that were, you know, they were like, wow, really? Here?
Yeah,
you
that's
know?
How I was so, growing up.
Yeah.
I so, never knew they were everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was great, all the different types of people and, you know, and then the people that were non-believers and there was people that were believers and, you know, there was, you know, die-hard believers, you know, and then there was other researchers there that came to that thing. It was pretty awesome. I thought it was pretty cool. I didn't expect, you know, that many people. I really didn't. You know, I was expecting, you know, maybe 50, 60 people, you know, which is just basically a room full, but this whole library was filled, and there was people that couldn't even get near the room, you know, and then they end up leaving because they couldn't come in and watch the presentation and stuff, and then there was people wanting to get in and beating on the door, and they can't get in because the librarian locked it because there was no room.
Okay,
then,
I'm going to make a suggestion here because you may have missed out on some incredible encounters and tales. Get a bigger room.
Well, when we booked that, she said the room holds 66 people. So we thought we would be okay, you know. But they plugged that thing in like 5 newspapers. and we didn't know at the time. They just said, you know, hey, we'll plug it into a couple newspapers, you know, to get the exposure out there. And then we come, you know, to come to find out, you know, Dan's talking back and forth with Lisa from the library and Justin from the mayor's office, you know. And then Dan would get a hold of me and go, guess what? Well, they put it in the Salem News, and then they put it in the Youngstown Vindicator, and then they put it in the Morning Journal, and then they put it in. I went, holy crap. Yeah. And like I say, we made front page news on the Salem paper, and then the Youngstown Vindicator paper, they sent a reporter down during our presentation, and they did a second story in the paper this morning, you know, about, you know, all the people attending, and then, you know, the reporter actually talked to some of the people that came to watch and all that, and they did a second story on it. So, you know, and we actually got, we have another town hall meeting coming up September 7th in Minerva.
Where's that at?
In Minerva, Ohio.
Oh, okay, okay. I'm not familiar.
Yeah, it's basically, if you were to drive from Latonia to Minerva, it would probably take you, you know, 45 minutes, an hour maybe. You know, it's a little bit more closer. Actually, you know, Minerva's only 10 minutes for me, but, you know, Dan could probably make it there in about 25. But, yeah, so, you know, we're doing another one there September 7th. We have our expedition coming up in 2 weeks in Pennsylvania. I did have a gentleman approach me after the presentation. We were all done. And he must do something with the Sportsman's Club in Latonia. And he wanted to know if we would come and speak to some kids. They're having some kind of kids' day or something at the Sportsman's Club. And he wanted to know if we would come up. And that's in, September 28th. He wants us to come there, and he's going, I'm going to tell you what, be prepared, because we usually have about 500 kids plus the parents. I went, oh, my God, really? So, yeah, he wants to line us up for that. Then I had a gentleman contact me this morning via Facebook, and he wants to know if I will do a presentation in Newton Falls at the library up there. I went, oh, my God, we're going to be busy.
Wow. I need some
research time here, fellas. But
I guess someone just sent me a private message question. They were wondering, what was the most asked question that you guys received from the audience?
The most asked question. I really don't think there was one, because people had so many questions. They were pretty much all different. I mean, people were asking us anywhere from bones to how do you think they make, you know. Nobody really asked basically the same question. You know, it was everything was different. And the main thing, you know, I had a hard time kind of, you know, answering that part of it. But, you know, I just said, you know what, I think, you know, this is just my opinion, but, you know, I think it's some type of human hybrid, and I would imagine they would mate just like we do. You know, so I said, but there's no proof, nobody could, you know, so. But, yeah, pretty much all the questions were, you know, all different. You know, I don't think there was one that even related to another, you know, so.
Okay. How long was the question and answer part?
Well, what we did, as we went through our presentation, we told everybody up front, you know, because I figured we was going to have a lot of questions. I said, you know what, as we're doing our presentation, as we go along, if you have a question, just go ahead and raise your hand, and then we'll answer it then. I said, you know, then, you know, later after we get done, we'll have a question and answer time, and then, you know, people can share their stories and all that kind of stuff. So we kind of basically did it the whole way through the presentation. Yeah, because we were there about 4 hours.
Oh, okay. Cool. Mm-hmm. We got another question. Someone asked if you would consider doing an outdoor presentation, doing demonstrations on casting, calling, and basic hiking in the woods.
Well, actually, we have talked about that. You know, that way, you know, when you hold something like that, you know, you'd almost have to hold it in a public area. You know, let's just give an example. You know, Salt Fork or West Branch or Mohican Park, you know, someplace like that. That way, you know, you could do a whole weekend, you know, thing, and everybody could come and camp, and, you know, you could actually hold different things, you know, during the day, you know, how to do cast, and, you know, even take a day walk through the woods, and, you know, of course, if somebody wanted to go out at night, you know, you always do that too, you know. We were already checking into doing that. I don't know when we'll do it. With everything that's going on now, we probably won't even do anything till spring or something, but I know when you do it at a public park, you know, you have to get
permits.
You got to get a permit. It don't cost anything, but you at least got to get the permit, because if you don't, then you hold the thing and they find out what you're doing, you can get in trouble. But the permit's free. You just got to get a hold of them and just add a little piece of paper, and then you're all good. But we've talked about doing that. Yep.
Yeah, and to me, Paul, that is like it's almost a necessity nowadays, especially with the amount of people in the woods and that many people that are interested in it, to get them in the position where they can obtain evidence the right way. You know, when they're going out, if they can do a proper cast, collect evidence the right way and not contaminate it, the more people that know, the more evidence will be collected. You know, to me, that's has to be sort of thing, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, if you can, I mean, I'm no professional, all right? You know, don't get me wrong, I'm no professional, I'm not a scientist, I don't do DNA, I don't, you know what I mean? But, you know, the only thing I can do is, you know, show you the most proper way to do it, and then, you know, that's that, you know, because like I said, I don't claim to be a professional, you know, caster or hair sample collector or anything, but, you know, I do know, you know, you're not supposed to touch it with your hands and, you know, always put it in paper instead of plastic, you know, just things of that nature.
Yeah, and it takes only a little bit to mess something up, like a cast. If you don't know how to, you know, casting takes practice over and over and over again to properly do, you know, what kind of product are you going to use and, you know, the circumstances around that. If you don't know how to do it, you can screw it up real quick and then it's useless.
Well, yeah, you know what? You know, some of the mistakes that people do is when they pour a cast, you know, sometimes they don't get the proper mixture. And then sometimes when they go to pull it out of the ground, you know, you're going to have that, you know, it's kind of stuck to the dirt anyway, and then you have a little bit of suction under there, and, you know, you almost just got to, you know, just dig under it and just keep going around it and just take your time to remove it, because otherwise it's going to break. You know, so,
right.
You know, I just use regular plaster of Paris. That's mm-hmm. all I use.
Well,
a lot of people, too,
feel they have to pull every little leaf or twig out of the cast, out of the actual imprint, which...
Right,
the,
yeah, you don't. Yeah,
yeah,
you don't want to disturb that. You know, the only thing that I do is if there's any type of loose leaf clutter or anything like that, you know, laying in a print, I'll blow it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anything loose, I just blow it out. Leave the rest of it alone. You know, and just like, you know, when you pour a cast, you know, and you're pouring that plaster of Paris in, you know, you want to make it basically like a pancake batter, you know, that consistency. And then what you want to do is you want to start, you can start at either end, but, you know, just say start at the heel, pour it in, and let it run into the cast. That way you don't disturb anything like dermal ridges that you could pick up, you know, stuff like that. But, yeah, just pour it in and let it run into the caps instead of blobbing it all over the place. But
have you ever tried that expandable foam to cast with?
No, never done that, huh? I don't even know anybody's even tried that. I've never seen anybody do it, but I would think that stuff really wouldn't pick up too much detail. You know, thermal ridges are hard to pick up, you know, so I don't know. I think the way that foam would come out of that can, if there was any type of thermal ridges, I think you would ruin them doing that. But, you know, I've used that stuff around my windows, you know what I mean, so it don't really come out as a liquid, but, and it's a pressurized can, but, yeah. I would just recommend plaster pairs, and this is what I do. I go out and I buy the Ziploc 1 gallon freezer bag, and I pre-mix plaster pairs. I put it in the bag, and then I put a bottle of water, you know, in there too. And then that way, you know, you can just open up that bag. The plaster pairs is already in there. You know, you pour in your water. You can mix it right in the bag, you know, because you really don't want to stir it. You know, the more stirring action that you have, because that plaster pairs, what it does, when you mix it with water, it starts creating heat. And the more you stir that around, the more heat it creates, and then it starts getting thick into the bag, and, you know, then you got problems. But, yeah, I just, you know, just put it in a 1 gallon freezer bag because they're thicker, and you can mix it right in the bag. You know, it take you maybe a minute tops, and then you just pour it right in there.
Seth in the chat room said he tried the foam as an option for snow tracks. I just thought maybe it might be something. It'd be light and easy. I wouldn't imagine it being as good. Have you tried it, Shane?
No, I have not. I know we discussed it up at the Olympic Project as an alternative, but I think it's something that should be looked into, maybe some sort of new product. I kind of agree with Paul on that. I've not tested it myself, so I don't trust it. Plaster for me works like Hydrocal or Plaster of Paris. But the one thing I also would mention is that you should not immediately go in, once you have the cast, is get a hose and start spraying it off, trying to clean off the dirt and stuff. Do you agree with that, Paul?
Oh, no.
Yeah.
No, yeah. Well, after you pour that cast, you know, I usually just let it sit, you know, a couple hours. I mean, it says it hardens in, you know, 20 minutes or whatever. No, I leave it sit a couple hours, and I'll go back, and, you know, I'll dig around. And then when you pull that out of the ground, yeah, you're going to have a bunch of dirt on it. Some of it you can just kind of just wipe off with your fingers. And after you get that cast home, you let it sit a day or two. Then you can just run it under tap water, use a toothbrush or something, you know, something that isn't real stiff, and just gently go over it, and it'll actually, you know, take all that dirt off. But, yeah. Don't rinse it as soon as you get it home. Let it sit a day or two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one other thing I was going to add on to that is that, Cliff Brockman was showing, and this is something I do already, but that you build up a little, berm around, I don't know if you do this, Paul, but berm up a little berm around the cast so that, you kind of get that fill station around it. You know, some people just pour directly on it, but I like to build up a little berm around the cast so it's got a little bit of a foundation and doesn't spread out.
Right. I mean, if you look on my YouTube channel, it's PHayes35, I'm on YouTube there, I do have a short video of me doing a cast. This last one that we got, it was like a 9-inch print. We actually took pieces of cardboard, and we took a knife, and, you know, we just cut a spot all the way around. We jammed that cardboard down around it. We didn't need the cardboard. We thought we did originally because just looking at the print, it looked really shallow, but it was actually deeper than what we thought. But we actually put the cardboard around because we had planned on, you know, filling that print and then actually, you know, building it up a little bit. That way you've got some strength to the print, but or the cast. But, you know, it shows that we did that, but we didn't actually need it. You know, cardboard's real good because, you know, you can bend it around, shape it any way you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can just take strips of cardboard and throw them in your backpack, you know.
Well,
yeah, exactly. And, you know, a suggestion is, I know quite a few people have done this, but, you know, as a practice method, go out, pour a little mud down, you know, a little water down, make some mud, and make your own foot impression and cast that, or go out and find some animal prints and cast that. Practice, 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 because there is no professional person at this. People screw up on it all the time. I've screwed up on it. I ruined
right.
a really good cast. You know, just practice, practice, practice.
Well, you
someone
know,
asked in the chat did. Room, what about digging up the whole print? I guess, and taking it home, or I don't know.
That's hard because, you know, it depends on the soil, and even then you're going to, I don't even know how that's possible
yeah.
without casting
it. You know, I think I watched a guy on YouTube do that. He actually dug up the whole, you know, he's taking like a foot of soil home with him, you know what I mean? But he actually dug up the whole print.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that thing's going to fall apart by the time you get it home, you know.
True.
You know, if you can't cast it, at least take pictures. You know, if you got something to measure with, great. If not, you know, reach in your pocket, grab a dollar bill or something and lay it down beside just for size comparison. You know, you can
yeah.
take pictures doing that, and that'll kind of give you know, people a general idea on how big that was, you know. So, but I always carry, it's actually like a hunter's tape measure. You know, it's plastic, it's waterproof, comes in a little round plastic container. I think it cost a dollar something. At Gander Mountain, I think I bought it, $1.87 or something. And, you know, I carry that, you know, and it's plenty long enough where, you know, you can measure any print you want. I think it's, I don't know, 5 feet long or something, 6 feet long or something like that. And like I say, you don't have to worry about ruins made out of plastic. You've got all your inches and everything on there. And,
yeah.
you know, it's under $2. So, yeah, it kind of resembles what, you know, women use for sewing, you know, but it's plastic, you know. And
hey, I sew, Paul. I sew too, Paul.
Do you?
No, I'm kidding, not really, but.
Someone else sent me a message. They're wondering if you ever come across any prints that aren't five toes.
No, I don't think I have. You know, like the last cast that we got, the 9-inch, you know, you could kind of see the outline of the big toe, you know, and then the middle toe, I don't know if it was deformed or whatever, but it was like 3/4 of an inch longer than the rest of them. But I've never actually seen, you know, like, you know, 4 toes or 3 or, you know, even 6 or whatever. I've never come across that, but I've heard people that have, you know, and whether it only had 4 toes or maybe that 5th toe just didn't make that impression.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Or deformed. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Beast of Boggy Creek was supposedly, was that only a 3-toe or what was that one?
I think the Beast of Boggy Creek.
Monster.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was either 3 or 4.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to go back to a certain point you made earlier about locations of research. You know, you say you like to do a lot of private property.
Mm-hmm.
And I do, too. I usually go out in areas, you know, a little bit of private property or just totally remote areas. But I get a lot of questions from people asking me, you know, where should they go? You know, should they check out the BFRO database, blah, blah, blah. And I always recommend that, you know, those are great things to look up and that they can point you in the right direction. But I tell people, that they can go out to areas that maybe have no reports or one or two reports, and that that the main things to look for is natural resources. Don't rely on areas that have been proven or have reports. You know, go to areas that you know, have natural resources that don't have a lot of reports. Sometimes those might be even better than areas with a lot of reports, because, you know, if it's got natural resources and it's an area where there's habitat, you know, they can hide, feed, and whatnot. To me, those areas are even better sometimes than areas with a lot of reports. Do you agree with that, Paul? Or?
Well, the BFRO database, you know, if somebody was checking the sighting and stuff, that's a good starting point, you know. But, you know, you also can, you know, man, you just go online and you can pretty much Google anything. And you know, there's people there that, you know, they would be talking in some type of forum, you know, about something that happened to them, but they've never reported it. But, they, you know, somebody must have strike up a conversation. They go, oh, well, you know what, back in, you know, 2009, me and my buddy, you know, and, you know, they normally kind of give the area a little bit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you know, I agree with you. I mean, you know, just because it hasn't been reported in a certain area doesn't mean it isn't there.
Right.
You know, you just gotta look at all the food resources, all the water resources, you know, you can even go online, and like I say, you know, I'm kind of like a firm believer of the mines and, you know, the caves and stuff like that, you know, and you can actually go state by state, and there's actually mining maps that show you where mine openings are, you know, how far, they tell you how far they go and where they go, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, you can almost, if you get a general idea or location, you know, hey, look into it. You know, even Google Earth it and, hey, is there any water? Is there any rivers? Is there any lakes? Is there any, you know, this? And then, you know, you can also get into, you know, stuff like, you know, you can look up, you know, what kind of things are in that area. You know, is there a fishery in that area? Is there, you know, just things of that nature. And then, you know, once you, you know, put everything together, okay, look, there's in this, you know, 8 mile square area, there's, you know, there's three small lakes, there's, you know, there's streams, there's, you know, there seems to be a you know, according to like Google Earth, you know, look here, there's cornfields, there's, you know, you can kind of put everything all together and go, you know what, that might be a good area. You know,
yeah.
Because just because somebody didn't report it doesn't mean it isn't there.
Exactly. No, exactly. And that's where I steer a lot of people towards that direction. Say, hey, you know, do your own research, you know, and find areas that, you know, there may be not a lot of reports, because some of those areas may be areas where people don't travel to as much as, you know, a lot of researchers do and whatnot. And if you can find a spot where it's kind of isolated with no reports, but it has all the components for survival, you know, you got deer, or, you know, you got, you know, an area where they can hide, where there's water and there's food, and that is, you know, that sort of situation, to me, that's phenomenal, and that's where I steer people. You know, yeah, it's good to find reports and whatnot in these areas and go in and do your research there, or just, you know.
Yeah, you know, whatever. Another thing, too, you got people need to keep in mind that, say they spend, you know, hours and hours and hours, you know, researching, you know, a certain location, and they come up with, you know, the water sources, the food sources, you know, you can look up deer population. I mean, there's so many things that you can look up for an area. It's unbelievable, you know. And let's just say they took a trip out there, and they're wandering around, and they're not seeing no prints. And, you know, say they even camped you know, out in the middle of the woods, you know, for the weekend or whatever, and they didn't hear anything. And, you know, don't give up, because you're not going to get something every time you go out. You know, there's a lot of times where, you know, you'll go out and you'll go out, you know, 12, 15 times and not hear a thing. But right. Then there's that one occasion, you know, you heard something, or you know, you felt you were being watched, or, you know, you heard something large, you know, going through the brush, and, or, you know, you heard rock clacking, or, you know, you're sitting around the fire and you're talking and you're roasting a hot dog, and next thing you know, you heard a couple tree knocks, you know. So, you know, if you go out to an area, you know, kind of dedicate, you know, yourself to that a little bit. You know, don't get discouraged if you go out and go, look, we went all the way out here for nothing. Keep going back, because, you know, if it's an area that these things travel through, migrate through, whatever they do, you know, you're going to end up hearing something.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, just don't get discouraged on, you know, just because nothing happens, you know, that doesn't mean the area is totally dead, you know. Just gotta keep going.
Yeah.
You know, lucky for us, you know, we've had a couple areas that, you know, produced rather quickly. And then the area where I had my sighting, there was all kind of activity at the end of that year, 2011. And then come January of 2011 until current, nothing. There is absolutely nothing. It's totally dead. There's no tree knocks. There's no, you know, footprints. There's no howls. There's not a daggone thing. But I'm not going to give up on the area. I'm going to keep checking it, because I just had a feeling that, you know, that was, you know, maybe like a rogue male actually coming through. And you know what? He's going to do it again one of these days.
Yeah.
You know, so we haven't give up on that area either. It's just, you know, it's just been totally dead. So doesn't mean it was, you know, just a once-in-a-lifetime thing, but, you know, it could have been. But we're not going to give up on it. You know, we're still going to keep an eye on it and an ear out and, you know, things of that nature. But so... Just one of them things, you know, not everybody gets lucky, you know, to, you know, hear something or see something. Then you get, you know, the fortunate ones that had more than one sighting, and, you know, so.
Yeah. That's awesome. Tim Mitchell was wondering if you ever sent the prints that you and Dan found to Dr. Meldrum.
No, we never did that yet. Actually, Dan was going to make a copy. We're not going to send Meldrum the original, because when you send Meldrum something, well, you don't get it back. He keeps it. So
yeah.
Dan has some, it's like molding material. I don't know. He has to make something and then put the cast in, and then he pours this liquid in to make a mold. Then pour the plaster in to make the print. So, yeah, we're just waiting on him to, you know, do that. That mold material is really expensive. I think it was like, can't swear to it, I think Dan said like a 16-ounce bottle was like $60-some. So, yeah, it's expensive. Now, it is reusable. You know, once you make a mold, you can actually heat that back up and it turns it back into a liquid, because I think he said it's a water-based. So whatever's left, you know, you can actually reuse over and over and over. So, but, you know, as you make something, you know, you're going to lose a little bit, you know what I mean, and then a little bit more until, you know, you got to buy more, but... Yeah, no, we already talked about that. We were going to make a mold, and then we were going to do that and send it to Melvin and see what he thinks about it, because I know that one cast, that 9-inch that I have, you know, it's got dermal ridges on it, you know.
Oh, wow.
on the one toe, and then down toward the heel, it has dermal ridges, kind of not right on the bottom of the foot, but kind of on the side a little bit. Yeah. So
9 inches, so that would have to be a juvenile then, huh?
Yeah, it would have to be a juvenile, yeah, because about 25 feet from the 9-inch print was a 13-inch print. So we think probably mother and juvenile, you know, in that area. But, yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty big foot.
Yeah, that's above average, that's for sure.
Right.
Paul, yeah. What are your thoughts? Because I know you mentioned it, and I firmly believe in this too, rogue males. What are your thoughts on rogue males? I had an encounter, Mount Hood here in Oregon. I've had a couple, but one that sticks out in my mind. What are your thoughts on rogue males?
You know, I think it is possible. You know, I don't know. People say that, you know, the rogue males are, you know, more nastier, you know, they have a really bad temper, but, you know, I don't know. There's been talk of, you know, the rogue males or you know, the ones that got kicked out of a family of them, you know, which could be true. I don't know. You know, nobody knows, but, you know, or it could just have been, you know, one that just decided he was going to leave the family and go on his own. I hear their temper is, you know, much worse than your average Bigfoot. But, you know, here again, it's all speculation, you know. You just, nobody knows, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I
know. What do you mean by rogue? Do you mean,
well,
like,
you know,
an independent one that kind of leaves the
plan?
Independent.
Yep, independent. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have a lot of thoughts on rogue males personally. You know, maybe it's one that gets, you know, raised up and then kicked out, or it's that time to leave. You know, there's a lot of animal species that do the similar things. You need to look at lions and whatnot. So to me, a rogue male, or males, depending on, they kind of get kicked out of that group, and they have to find their own Sasquatch group to, or females to, you know, live with and whatnot. So they're kind of in that awkward area where they're a little mischievous or territorial. And to me, some of those encounters that are a little bit more hairy than most might be rogue males.
Yeah, that's all very possible. God, I wish I knew more, but, you know,
right.
Like I say, nobody does. It's all speculation, and,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
You know, it's just like some of the stuff that, you know, people come up with to make up for lack of evidence. You know, some of the stuff I do find bizarre, you know, but some of the stuff I find it really hard to believe. People actually believe that stuff, but, you know, I have my opinion, and, you know, and that's it, you know. I mean, I just read a post on Facebook here this morning, somebody asking if they believe, they actually took a poll and asking if people believe that an 8 or 10 foot Sasquatch could shrink down to 5 or 6 inches or something. And I'm like, really? Come on. You know, I've heard things.
Leprechaun.
You know, I've read things on Facebook where people come up and they go, well, I heard this guy talking. I'm not going to mention nobody's name because I don't want to start nothing. But he was going on and on and on about UFOs and Bigfoot. Okay. He was saying that the aliens grow Bigfoot in test tubes on the spaceship, and then when they get big enough, they drop them off on Earth. And, I shake my head. I can't, you know, that makes no sense to me, you know. And then, you know, I do got people going, hey, you know what, Bigfoot and UFO are associated. Well, I'm on the fence on that one. I'm not going to say no, and I'm not going to say yeah, simply because of one thing.
Well, I'll say no, so there you go. I don't care who attacks me. That's just my personal opinion.
Well, this is the only thing, until somebody can explain it to me, then maybe I'll go either way. But how many times do you see or hear, hey, you know what, here's an open field, and we have 3 footprints, and they're, say, 5 feet apart. And there's 3, and then there is no more. Where did it go?
Well, I found bear prints like that. I found deer prints like that. And I found a lot of other animal prints like that. I can't explain it, but I guarantee they're not all jumping on UFOs. I mean, that's just my personal opinion.
I can't explain it,
but they just are not there. They jump off in a different direction or jump on a rock.
Yeah,
maybe the prints we find are the ones the Sas didn't cover up himself.
Well, I mean, you know, anything's possible. You know,
right?
Anything is possible. You know, so the UFO thing, I'm not going to say yeah, and I'm not going to say no. I'm on the fence, but somebody would really have to, you know what, in order for me to probably believe it, I have to see Mr. Alien guy beam up a Bigfoot, you know, up into the thing, you know, and I'd have to witness it and go, oh, well, that's cool, you know. But, I had a gentleman, he showed up at our meeting with Tonya, and he's into the Bigfoot and the UFO thing and stuff like that, and he asked me, he goes, do you think Bigfoot and UFO are related? And I'm like, dang it, Fred, you know, don't ask me that, because, you know, I'm leaning toward I don't think so, but, you know,
yeah,
I'm going to keep an open mind on some of it. I will. I'll keep an open mind on some of it. I'm not going to close out everything, but so my mind is open on that subject, but somebody's going to have to really give me some good evidence to get me to sway them that way, you know. But
no, I agree. You know, I keep an open mind because I'm no expert. I'm no scientist.
Nobody. When it comes to Bigfoot, there's nobody that's an expert.
No, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So I don't claim to be one, you know.
Right. No, and that's why I love you guys, because you guys don't claim to be. There's so many groups out there, I'm not going to name names, but they claim to be experts, or they know for fact this and that. And it's not true, because if they didn't know for fact, it'd be announced to the world and it would be accepted. So nobody knows anything for fact.
Right.
I know personally they exist. What exactly they are, I don't know. I can't prove anything, you know. So there is no expert in this field. There's a lot of egotistical people in this field. There's a lot of wannabes and whatnot, you know, and that's unfortunate, but you could find it anywhere. You know, people think it's just in the Bigfoot community. No, you could find it anywhere.
Right.
But, you know.
You know, all the same basic stuff happens. It don't matter if you're ghost hunting. It don't matter if you're doing Bigfoot. It don't matter if you're doing UFOs, Dogman. You know, Mothman, you're going to have the same stuff no matter, you know, what realm that you're in. So, it's just like the cloaking thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe it has the natural ability to bend light. I don't believe that.
Well, I agree with you there, Paul. Absolutely, 100%.
You know. I might believe it if I'd ever see it, then I'd be crazy then, but, I'd almost have to see it, because I just don't believe it has the ability to to bend light.
Yeah.
Natural ability, born natural ability to bend light. I don't believe that.
Yeah, I mean, if Patty was real, why didn't Patty cloak? You know, D.W. Lee and 10 other people witnessed a Bigfoot
yep.
for like 5 minutes or whatever, and the thing didn't cloak. You know, all these people witnessed Bigfoot, and it hides or leaves to escape, but, you know, when it should be cloaking, but it doesn't.
Well, you know, the one that I seen, he was pretty much out in the open. I mean, you know, there were some saplings and a little bit of brush and stuff between
right.
it and I, but he was pretty much standing out in the open. He wasn't hiding behind a tree, you know, anything like that. It didn't cloak, you know, so, you know.
I mean,
and
I just,
got,
I think we need to stick with the basics. We need to prove this species. You know, if our goal as a researcher or enthusiast is to prove the species, then I think we need to do it the scientific way. And, you know, if there is some sort of cloaking or camouflage or whatever they may do, we can figure that out later, you know. I mean, people already don't take this field serious. But you bring cloaking
right.
into the mix.
Right. And then you've got, you know, some people that believe in the mind speak thing. I don't believe that either. You know, I just,
oh, man.
Some of the stuff, I really find it hard to believe. I can't grasp, you know, some of the stuff that, you know, is being brought up, you know.
Well, that's my problem with social media is because you will not find this stuff anywhere else other than Facebook and a few .com sites. It's nothing substantial. It's one person or a group of people saying this. Or, you know, they'll show a picture of a blob squatch and they expect you to see it. And if you don't see it, you're an idiot or blind. And I have a huge problem with that because
I've
you know,
had a few people do that to me. They
right.
want my opinion on a picture. They go, man,
yes.
I really want your opinion on this. And, you know, they show me this picture and I look at it and I look at it and I look at it. And then I'll ask them a question and then I'll look at it some more and I'll blow it up a little bit bigger and then I'll look at it. And, you know, if I don't see it, I say, you know what? I really
don't see,
what, you know, kind of explain to me the area in the picture that you're, you know, and I'll try to work with them a little bit.
Right.
You know, and I don't go, you know, I don't say, you know what? I think you're full of crap. I don't do that. You know, I basically just tell them, you know what? The picture that you sent me, I don't really see it, but, you know, I wasn't there. I don't know what you had seen. You know, you will know more. You were there. So you took the picture. But, you know, just from the picture that you sent me, I'm just not quite seeing it. Or there's sometimes I say, you know what, I do see something. I can't make out exactly what it is, but I do see something. You know, so, you know, I don't, you know, I don't want people getting mad at me. They ask for my opinion.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want them getting mad at me just because I don't see it. But yet I'm not calling anybody a liar, not telling anybody they're full of crap or nothing. It's just, you know, every time you do something with a picture, and it don't matter if you pull it into a program to crop it down, okay, well, guess what? You just change that picture, you know? And if you pull it in to try and brighten it or, you know, grayscale or, you know, whatever you're doing with it, every time you save that picture, you're losing quality. And then when you take that raw picture right off your camera,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you do anything with it, even saving it from your camera to your computer, you're affecting quality, you know.
Right.
So by the time you do whatever you're doing with the picture, the quality isn't as good as the original, you know. So sometimes that affects, you know, what you can see in it, you know. And then when you start sending it over Facebook, of course, the quality starts, it gets cut down because it's going, you know, to Facebook and everything. It's not going to be, you know, in HD anymore. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Yeah,
the best thing to do, man, you know, if you got, you know, raw footage and you want people to, you know, look at something, man, the best way to do it is if you took it right off your camera and it's on your computer and your camera's HD and it's on your computer in HD, you want to show them on your computer, you know, so.
Yeah.
Because every time you do something with a picture, you lose quality. So,
absolutely.
And then, you know, there are pictures that, you know, actually come out pretty sweet, you know, even after photo rendering and, you know, and sending it here and sending it there and cropping it. And you can still go, you know what? Yeah, you do got something there, you know, so.
Well, no, I agree with you, Paul, and that's a great, you know, people automatically assume when you're not agreeing with them that you're a hater or just, you know, discounting them.
Yeah,
not the fact. You know, it's just that you don't see what they're seeing, and it could be because of the film or whatever, you know. It's nothing to do with that sometimes, but, you know,
some of
I do
it's
have,
just so absurd, though.
I do have a problem with a lot of those that keep posting the same thing with different, you know, different pictures over and over again, and there's really nothing there. You see a stump, you see a tree, you see a dark patch, nothing there. And I do have a little problem with them, and I just usually shut my mouth and don't say anything because, like,
yeah, I don't
said,
bother anymore.
I'm not trying to harm anybody or discount anybody. That's what you want to do. Cool. Have at it. You know, I'm not going to go there, and I know that's what Paul is saying too. You know, it's, you know.
It will speak for itself. Yep, it's nothing against anybody. It's
right.
Just, you know, some people see things in a different view than you do, and
right.
you know, you were there, so you know what you heard, and you kind of know, you know, you've seen a little movement or something because you were there. So you snapped that picture, you know. So yeah, I mean, yeah, you know. You know, I don't intentionally do it to discredit anybody or anything like that. It's just, you know, by the time, you know, I get it, you know, the photo quality isn't as good, you know, and you know, if I just don't see it, you know, that I'm honest, you know. So
yeah.
It's just like I'll give you a good example. I'm gonna give you a perfect example. And this
happened
to me. We were down researching at a location, and I have a Sony HD XR, yeah, I don't know, what is it, some high-definition camcorder, whatever it is. It's got 160 gig built-in hard drive in it, whatever. Now, it takes damn good video, and I was doing the video, and one of our team members, he was way up ahead of me. And, you know, I was just video and, you know, we were going up through the woods and all that. Well, I posted, you know, I took that video and then, of course, you know, I had to, Sony puts it in a weird format, that ACHVD format. That's Sony's format. Well, not too many programs will support that type of file. So I got to take it off my camcorder, put it on my laptop, then I have to convert it, okay, to a type of Flash or, you know, Windows player type file, okay? So I got to convert it. Well, now that I converted it, I lost quality. And I posted this on my YouTube channel. And I was down at Salt Fork. I went down to meet Doug Waller and Shauna Parks, and it was on a Saturday. They were having like a group camp out thing going on. I went down for the day. Doug wanted to show me some good spots and, you know, take me in there. Well, we got all done, and we stopped at the one place there, and, you know, I had my, at the time, he was 8 years old, I had my kid with me. And we stopped to use the bathroom because it's an hour drive home. And my cell phone rings. And I think it was Dan. He wasn't with us on that expedition. And he's going, "You're not going to believe this. I was watching that video that you put on YouTube. And I think you caught Bigfoot on your video." And I'm going, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah." And then he had Sue watch it, and she says, "Man, it sure looks like you caught him walking through the woods." Well, now I'm getting excited. I get on my phone, I call another team member, and I said, "Dude, pull up my video and go to, you know, whatever minute and seconds, and tell me what you see." And he pulls it up, and he's going, "Man, I see something walking through the woods." I said, "Well, is it Bigfoot?" He goes, "I'm telling you what, man, it sure freaking looks like it." And I said, "Well, you know, check that out and, you know, see what you can come up with." And I'm down in Salt Fork. I'm on my way home now. So then I called another team member, and, you know, I talked to him, and I'm going, "You know, check out this video," because now I'm all excited, right?
Right.
And they're telling me the same thing. "Dude, I see something." And he goes, "But I can't tell what it is." I said, "Is it, you know, like big and hairy and furry and, you know, all that?" He goes, "Man, I'm telling you what, it's dark. It looks like dark hair, you know." So now I'm like 40 minutes away from home. I can't wait to get home. I said, "You know what, I got the raw video, you know, still on my computer that hasn't been converted." And I finally get home, and I, you know, turn on my laptop, man, I boot it all up, and I get in there, and I click on that raw video, and I take it to that certain area, and I'm watching, and I'm like, it was one of our other researchers that was ahead of me walking through the woods. He was wearing a black shirt, and then his pants were kind of like a brownish color that he was kind of blended into the brush. It was one of our research. So that's a good example of what happens to quality when you start converting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because and it's a good example of honesty too, though.
Yep, because all of the other team members, you know, they're going, "Man, this really looks good. Yeah, you got something there." And I said, "Well, let me get home and look at the raw footage that came directly off the camcorder, you know, before it was even, I converted it, because I had the converted one and then the original." And when I pulled up the original, being crystal clear, I said, "Nope." I said, "That was one of our team members." So that's a good example of how you lose photo quality when you convert things, you know, videos to, you know, a flash type player and, or a Windows media file, you know, especially when it came off a Sony camcorder. So, you know, you got the same thing when you start converting videos to GIF to JPG and vice versa, you know. So,
yeah,
real good example. But, you know, we took care of it. We said, "Nope, that's just one of our team members," you know, because it was clear as a bell on my original footage. So that's a good example that actually happened.
Great example. Yeah, great example.
You know, to get back to something we were talking about earlier, when you were saying that you think they might possibly migrate, how far are you talking as far as the migration?
You know, that's really hard to tell. I think it could be possible that, you know, these things might migrate, you know, maybe, you know, hundreds, even thousands of miles, you know, throughout the year, because, you know, they're going to have to follow where the food is. And, you know, just my own personal opinion, by going over reports that's been reported, you know, sightings and, you know, just all that stuff, you know, just for example, somebody seen one crossing the road, and it was going from the right side of the road to the left side of the road, and then, you know, this road runs, you know, east and west or whatever, and, you know, going, "You know what, they cross that road deal, and then the road goes east and west, whatever, that thing's heading north." I think these things go north and south. I don't think they go east and west. I think majority of their travel route is north and south, just by going over the reported sightings, you know, when they give enough detail, you know, "Hey, I was on this road," and you pull up that road, you see that road goes east and west. That road goes no way north. and it went from, you know, this side crossed over, and that, you know, it's like north and south. The majority of the sightings are north and south.
I wouldn't think they would migrate that far, though, because, you'd think it'd kind of give them away. I mean, these things are, we're talking 9 foot, 900-pound creatures. You know, in my opinion, I think they would find an area that is, super inaccessible for humans, and they would stick to that area. Yeah, if they run out of food. I mean, this area could be, 50 miles wide.
Here's the thing. It does make a difference on, what state, too.
Yeah.
Okay. That's going to make a big difference on it, too. Let's just give an example. Florida. They don't get no snow. They don't get none of the harsh winter. They don't get none of that. So no need to migrate from there.
Mm-hmm.
But like in Ohio, late in the year, everything dies off. The only corn there's going to be is, what a farmer has put up in his, silo or, whatever. There's not going to be any cornfield. There's not going to be any soybean. There's not going to be any berry. There's not going to be any nuts. There's not going to be, there's going to be deer, but, and then small animals, we don't have, wild pig or nothing here, anything like that. So I think it depends on the state. Like Ohio, I would almost say they would migrate somewhere else during the wintertime just to follow the food sources. But you get the states, California, no need to leave there. No need to leave Florida, any place like that.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. They're forced to go with food. But, I mean, they have found those trackways in the snow on the Canadian border of Minnesota, so
right,
they're obviously
mm-hmm.
sticking around, or maybe that was on their way south, but I don't think they could get away with it, though, because, if someone said, well, they could follow phone lines, or they could follow railroad tracks, but they're going to be seen then. This is an animal that's trying to stay elusive and not be seen, and if this thing's traveling halfway across the country, I think we would have discovered it by now.
Right, here in Oregon, the area I research, I think they travel to higher and lower elevations during the year, within like a 50 to 100 mile radius, just like the deer do and every other animal, depending on where the food sources are at and the weather. I don't think they really migrate too much. Not that they don't in certain states, but here in Oregon,
they'd have to be geniuses. They'd have to know every little nook and cranny of every area,
Evidently,
I guess they
are geniuses because they're smarter than we are because, nobody's got one yet. But,
that's true.
Right.
The migration, it's just another opinion, I just think in some states they move out of the state in the winter. But, hey, I can be wrong. That's just my opinion,
In like deciduous forests, those might be sweet during the summer, but as soon as fall hits and all the leaves are gone, they're like sitting ducks. So, then they could see them going to a coniferous area.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, during the winter here in Oregon, there are certain parts I can't get to because of the snow. But during the fall and summer months, I can get to those areas, and that's where I find evidence of Sasquatch. So that's why I feel they move up and down mountains or valleys and whatnot, depending on the weather and food source. So you can say migration, or you can say, they go where the food's at and habitual spots. So I'm not really a big person into the whole migration thing. Not that they don't. Like Paul said, we know nothing.
Yeah, we don't know, but it's
pure
speculation. Yeah.
Yeah.
And everybody has their own different opinion on what they do.
Yeah.
I don't you know, I don't knock anybody for that. That's, you know, everybody's entitled
right.
to their own opinion, whatever they think, you know, that's great. But, you know, some of the other things that are being brought up are just totally bizarre to me, and I, like, brush that off. I don't even get into that type of argument, you know, but.
Yeah.
You know,
just, yeah,
you know,
for,
you
good
know, for example, the cloaking thing, you know, I did have, there was a someone who posted a picture of a cloaking Bigfoot. She goes,
is there such a
said,
thing?
They said,
I couldn't see
can
it.
You, can you see the cloaking Bigfoot? And I'm going, how do you know that's a cloaking Bigfoot? Because a Bigfoot cloaks, that means he's invisible. So how did you take a picture of something that's invisible? You know, so I don't know. I don't even get into them
yeah,
arguments.
Yeah.
You know, them type of groups I'm not even part of. You know, I just want to shy away from it. You know, I don't, you know, I want no part
yeah.
of that.
You guys
of,
got a good
you
thing
know.
Going with your group, and you guys are
hey,
growing
we,
and you're getting your name out there.
Yeah, we actually, last I checked today, we were at like 401 members in the 4 months we've opened the group on Facebook.
Nice. And I totally promote and support you guys and as much as I can because you're one of the few groups that I really like to like what you guys are doing out there.
Well, you know, we get out there and we try, you know. I mean, you know, we're not professionals, you know. We aren't experts. And, you know, so anybody that claims to be an expert, well, nobody is because you just don't know enough, you know, so about this thing. But so we don't claim to be professionals. We try to be professional as possible, you know. And when we document something, you know, we document, you know. It's pictures, it's video, it's in writing, you know, we take measurements, you know, and all that kind of good stuff. So we try to do the best that we can do. And, you know, once in a while we'll flub up and, you know, we'll forget to turn on a recorder or something, you know. We've
yeah.
done that, you know. And, you know, there's been times that, you know, we'll have the recorder running, you know. I made... for my H2 recorder, I made a waterproof enclosure for it. And actually, I bought the waterproof box at Walmart. It cost me like $6. And then, of course, you know, we cut a hole in the bottom of it. And the only part of the recorder was actually hanging out was the microphone end of it. And then, you know, we took the that windsock that it comes with. And once we stuck it through the box, we put the windsock over the end of it, and then that's the end that points down to the ground. And I set this thing up. I even bought another 12-volt battery and bought a little converter thing to hook up to the 12-volt battery to knock the voltage down to, like, whatever it was, 1.5 amp or something, so the recorder will run on it. And... I ran this thing in two-channel MP3 mode, like 96 kbps per second or whatever it records is. And I strapped this thing to a tree. I charged up the battery. I strapped it to a tree. And then what I did, I took some of that camouflage cloth. You can buy it at Walmart, too. And I cut a piece off of it, and I just wrapped it around just to camouflage it a little bit. And I hit the record button, I closed it, we mounted it, and then I left it there for a week. And this thing recorded like 9 gig of audio. And the audio was so big, I couldn't pull it in my audio program to analyze anything because it was too big. So I had to split it into 6 different parts. And it rained for like 3 days straight. I'm talking hard rain. And, I mean, it was just, you know, all day and all night. And the only thing you heard on this recorder was the rain, you know. And you know, but the thing with it is, it never got a drop on it. I was really surprised. That was like a really good test for it. But actually, in between the rain, I did pick up a couple times some tree knocks. And then one time, I don't know, it was so noisy in the woods that night. It was, I keep thinking, according to the time on the recorder and all that, it was like 12 o'clock at night. Now, I tell you what, it sounded like something was rearranging that forest. It was like something was being thrown and just all kind of stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And, but, yeah, it records 9 gig of data on that thing. And then these two, they're a little expensive, but, you know, they're worth it. You know,
well, most of your equipment that if you take this field serious, not cheap. You know, I got, I can't personally afford a FLIR, but Derek Randall's loaned me one, and I'm grateful to him for that. You know, he loaned it to me, and as soon as he wants it back, it's his, you know, unlike certain people. But as soon as he wants it back, it's his, and I'm grateful for it. But I was going to ask you, Paul, I don't know if we've covered this before or not, but and I've experienced this myself personally, but what are your thoughts on rock clanking and, stick structures, especially X formations? But if you can start out with, like, rock clanking. I've heard rock clanking that have lasted over an hour, 2 a.m. in the morning in really remote areas. What are your thoughts on rock clanking and, like, you know, stick structures, mainly, X formations?
Well, you know, as far as the rock clacking, I've heard that. I've actually been in an area where I've heard that. And then I've also heard what sounded like something picking up a huge rock. I'm talking a rock probably a couple feet by a couple feet and slamming it down on top of another one. I've actually, you know, heard that firsthand. You know, I don't know. It seems to me that, you know, when you would do that, you would either A, be trying to get something open, you know, say as like a shell,
yeah,
you know, or, you know, we don't even know if these things make any kind of tooling or not. We have no idea. You know, that's always a possibility. I'm not saying 100%.
Yeah.
You know, just a possibility.
Yeah, that's what's kind of weird, is they're supposed to be these super geniuses, yet we say they don't use tools.
Right.
Well, we don't know if they do or not.
Yeah, obviously they might not have shovels and pickaxes, but...
Yeah, they're
rocks
not going to have
sticks.
That, but, would they make anything like a cutting instrument or anything, you know? Because, you know, you hear of sightings where, say, a deer's belly, you know, was, you know, cut open or whatever. You know what I mean? Not actually, you know, they don't say that the flesh was ripped open. They just said it was like, you know, pulled open or cut open. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it wasn't ripped open, you know. So I don't know. Maybe do they, you know.
Use a sharp rock.
Sharp rock or something to, you know, just to, you know, because they could carry that around wherever. You know what I mean? But, you know, I've actually heard it.
Yeah. No, I've heard it. Personally, I went camping in a remote location, and I heard it over a two-night camping trip out in this location, and I found it really odd. The first night, it lasted over an hour. The second night, it lasted about a half hour. But after a half hour, we had a rock come into our camp. I mean, just missed my buddy's tent. Just missed it.
Wow.
And so, having, you know, listened to this over a two-night experience, it was like they were, it was clanking, 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 and then the rock came into camp. And after the rock came into camp, it stopped. It was almost like it was chipping off a piece of rock, or I don't know what, I don't know. But rock came into camp later. You know, like it was trying to break off a piece of rock or something.
That's always a possibility too. You know, instead of throwing a 2-foot rock into camp, you know, it's easier to lug a 2-inch one over, you know. So, you know, and then, you know, you got, you know, maybe, I imagine it would be strong enough to crack a walnut and not have to use a rock for that. But,
yeah,
you know, what about, you know, shells that it finds, you know, in the water, you know, take a rock and break it open or whatever. But
if you're talking coastal, I'm talking like where I was at. It was way up on Mount Hood. There's no shells up there. It's remote lakes and whatnot, and mounds of rocks and the whole nine. You know,
mm-hmm.
it's a very volcanic area where rocks are found everywhere.
Yeah.
You know, and the stories that have come out of this area, Joe Bielhart has a great story of an area he researches where the somebody had found or had spotted three Sasquatches lifting up rocks. I mean, not even rocks, boulders, and digging out ground squirrels that were like hibernating or burrowing and eating them. We're talking like a male, female, and infant squatch. So rocks, to me, play a huge thing into, you know, encounters, and as well as stick structures to some point in extension. But I always find that fascinating just because of my encounter.
Well, you know, I'd say another one of my opinions on rock throwing and rocks is, you know, you hear a lot of people say, hey, you know what, we have something throwing rocks at us, and it's not hitting us, but it's getting really close. You know, I think these things are really good marksmen as far as rock throwing, and I think they use rocks to catch some of their prey. You know,
absolutely,
hit it
yeah.
in the head with a rock and then go over and, you know, because, you know, it's like a deer, you know, deer run pretty quick. So,
yeah.
you know, hell, if they were, you know, 30 feet from a deer, you know, think they could knock it in the head or something with a rock, and then that would stun it for a second or two. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or, you know, even a, you know, a rabbit or a, you know, whatever, you know. Turkey, anything, you know, they could hit it with a rock and stun it just long enough to so they could catch it or whatever. But yeah, I think they use rock throwing as a type of, you know, weapon to catch some of their food.
Definitely, I think that would be their main tool.
Yeah.
Well,
then,
it looks like we're down to our last couple minutes here. So. Thanks a lot, Paul, for calling in, man. It's always good to hear what you guys are up to. And
yeah, no problem. Like I say, we got this expedition here in 2 weeks, and then we'll let everybody know what we find on that. And then another
cool.
town hall meeting in Minerva on September 7th. We'll probably do the talking to the kids on the 28th.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we're going to be busy for a little bit. You know, we try to post everything that we do and everything that we come up with and, you know, share it with everybody, you know, so.
Awesome.
Heck yeah. Well, thanks everyone for joining us.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on here. Dan sent me a message and said, hey, you know, them guys need somebody to call in there and do a radio show, and that's why I went to your page and, you know, you posted you were doing the show, so I said, what are you doing at? So now? Okay, let me call in.
No, Paul,
yeah.
you and Dan are always a welcome guest on here. You guys always have you know, wealth of knowledge and really love the Janowska Project, and we want to promote you guys and appreciate you guys being on, sharing your experiences and your knowledge. You know, no expert in this field, but you guys are on key. And we really appreciate it.
Yeah, like I say, we appreciate you guys having us on here. It makes it a good evening, you know. So
yeah.
Okay,
right,
well,
John?
I'm going to jump off here, and you guys take care, and thanks for having me on, and maybe next time Dan can join us.
Excellent.
All right.
Thank you.
Sounds good.
All right, yep, you guys have a good night.
You too, buddy.
Yep, bye.
All right. Well, that was cool.
Right, well, great show. Yeah, really appreciated that. You know, after last night's show with Steve Calls and whatnot, this is a great way to kind of reintroduce ourselves back to the community, and I hope everybody here on that joined us on Monster X really enjoyed this, and we'll be having multiple guests on this show, and thank you all for joining us.
Yeah, we'll see you next week. Thanks, everyone in the chat room.